From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 24th day of October 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Nathan Klucheski will join us. He's a plant pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of M, and will help us explore a new plant disease in corn that's having an impact across a large portion of the Midwest, tar spot. You may want to know a bit more about that, especially if you live in northern Illinois or Michigan, Wisconsin, parts of Iowa, even right here in our part of the world. He'll give you some insight into the yield impact it has and how you might be able to identify it in your fields, even today, as you're in the midst of corn harvest. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and we'll do all of that on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Jackie, good to have you with us again for the day. Thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome. You know I love it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some things that have been happening in the marketplace and rumblings that we've heard about, but haven't really discussed during the Closing Market Report just yet. We've talked a lot about the growing season in Brazil. It started well. There are other factors there I'll ask you about in a minute, but where do we stand today on what they look like in South America?
Well, they've gotten really timely rains. I mean, they just are doing very, very well. There's no question. There's a small spot in Paraná, which is a major state, but that is having some problems. But other than that, they couldn't be off to anything better. Let's just put it that way. You know, it's not something we like to hear. And, you know, they've made the adjustment now to meet some of China's demands. In other words, they're planting shorter maturity beans, and there's a high likelihood that we're going to see beans coming to market already down there mid-December rather than mid-January. Now, that's all going to depend upon how everything finishes out, but, you know, they're trying to adjust so that they can continue to hold that market. We're counting on the fact that they won't be able to, and that we're going to get a window in there where we can actually ship beans, you know, to China or to whoever China might be buying them from. And so it all remains to be seen. But when you look at Brazil, I'm just going to tell you right now, the agricultural situation in Brazil is really riding a tight wire. They have their election. The final election is going to be on Sunday. And the Bolsonaro is heavily favored, and he is very much what you would call the farmer's friend down there. So he has said that, you know, he's going to, if he's elected, he'd like to remove or reduce some of the environmental plans and things like that. And therefore, you know, that would give them the ability to increase production. He'd like to get rid of the, when you buy a hectare of land, you have to keep 20% of it in forest. He'd like to get rid of that and be able to make it all into production land. So, you know, exponentially, you'd expect to see more exports in grains, livestock, and cotton coming out of there if he gets elected. But we'll see that on Sunday.
Yeah, so if he were to be elected, and you and I have talked about this a lot, in terms of acreage in Brazil, it's not about taking going further into the rainforest, but acreage which is already in play and production has 20% set aside by law.
Yeah.
And that's generally, yeah, I think, been scrub land where you see them running with, you know, chains between a couple of Caterpillar tractors and pulling out small trees and stumps and such, and could be converted relatively quickly. I can't imagine that producers wouldn't do that in a hurry for next year's crop. And I don't know, they maybe even think about something for this year's crop, given the start that they've had. That could be substantial in the change in acreage down there, I would think.
That's right. Could be hurtful to us. There's no question about that, you know, and because everybody thinks everything remains the same, but it doesn't. And so when this election is over, it's going to give a big indication as to what's going to happen and how that's going to impact us. You know, that's the thing I think that as producers, you always have to keep in mind, you know, it's a world market. It is not a U.S. market. It is a world market. You know, and as a world market, you've got to be prepared to protect yourself from this type of thing.
Speaking of acreage changes, the Dakotas in particular, because of the problems on the global front with the trade tariffs, China and soybeans, I'm wondering if there'll be much in the way of acreage changes out there and whether you've thought a lot about how that flows into the rest of the global trade market.
Well, you know, when you look at the Dakotas, of course, we ramped up the bean acres up in the Dakotas, you know, after extremely favorable prices, and after we managed to get some hybrid seeds that can handle better weather conditions than what we've had before. And so, you know, you look at 2.8 million acres up there could be cut out, you know, and if we do that, well, excuse me, we're thinking maybe 2 million acres out of next year is what I was talking about, could be cut out. 118 million of that comes out of the Dakotas. So, you know, that's about 25% of their recent acreage. So now the question comes down to what are they planted in? You know, it's likely to go into wheat because wheat's really one of the favorable crops at this point in time. And yet, you know, then the question comes up, well, what about crop insurance? Will crop insurance make up the difference? You know, if they do have a big problem up there, all those types of things, crop insurance in North Dakota and South Dakota is just horrifically expensive because they've had so many claims over the years. And so, you know, the decisions as far as being able to determine what they want to plant, it's going to be a really tough call because of the Pacific Northwest. You know, they basically have lost their market. You know, there's only a few places taking beans out of the Pacific Northwest anymore at this point in time because that was China's big thing. And so, you know, it's going to be tough. There's no question about it. And, you know, with that, Todd, I'm going to segue over to my beans just a bit. You know, we every time we hear the word China, we cringe now, you know, because of the bean tariff situation. And yet, when you look at the overall demand for beans, you look at export inspections and where they've been going to, you know, technically, we haven't lost that many bushels of bean exports, primarily because of the fact that we've had so many other countries that have now started picking up places that hadn't bought before, and the majority of them are from Asia. And so my guess is we've still got beans going to China, and I don't think that situation is necessarily going to stop. So it's just so hard for the people in North Dakota and South Dakota logistically to be able to get it to a market and still make money on it. That's the hardest part.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about the futures market as well. I've seen some things talking about the carry in the market for both corn and soybeans, what that means to producers. And I'm thinking about, as the futures months expire, what this means about storage and how that normally would happen and whether it happens differently in some years than others. What historical context can you help me put that into?
Well, you know, I think the best way to think about it, at least it's been the best way for me to understand it, is that, you know, when you look at a futures market is there to basically tell you if there's enough carry in the market to be able to store grain waiting for better prices, or if there isn't any carry in the market, telling you that we want your product right now, you know, we're not going to necessarily pay you more further out. And so, you know, when you look at the whole picture, the futures market was set up as an indicator, you know, number one, to shift risk, but also to give us an idea as to whether or not, as producers, we should be hanging on to grain or should we be selling grain. And, you know, when you come right down to it, when there's big carry in the market, they're saying to you, you know, we don't need this grain right now, but we are going to need it later. And especially if the carry is higher than you would normally expect per month difference between the contracts, they're just saying, you know, we're going to be glutted now at harvest. Let's just put it, we'll put it into the harvest. We're going to be glutted at harvest. So we already know it's hard. We don't need it. So we're going to inflate the price, you know, to the deferred months, hoping that the farmer then will hang on to the grain and first move it into the market when they have the opportunity to be able to handle it. So, you know, they don't want to have to have to go out and secure any additional storage. And that's what happens if you take in grain and you don't have a place to put it. And so that's what the market is supposed to do. And so when you look at it historically, and every single month that we have an expiring contract, Todd, what your contracts are telling you is a picture of demand. If the current contract is at, say, let's say the current corn contract, I'm just going to use this as an example, is at 360. And the next contract, which is 3 months out, you know, should be about 12 cents higher, basically is 15 cents higher. And you see it every once in a while. They're saying, we don't want the grain right now. We'll pay you to store it, is what we'll do. But again, if there isn't adequate carry in the marketplace, you're not getting paid for storage, then the wise business thing to do is to move the grain and either take a re-ownership position or something like that. And so it tells you a ton of information just by looking at the futures. You know, at the only step that's missing from looking at the futures is, what does my basis do? And so that's the other key, you know, that's why it's so important that our producers just really watch their basis too. But, you know, it's a circumstance where you can learn a lot about the market just looking at the futures. If there's a lot of carry, they don't want your grain right now. If there's no carry, we want it now. We're not necessarily going to pay you more for it later.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it too.
That's Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. Hey, you know, we're less than a month away from the Farm Assets Conference, Tuesday, the 20th day of November in Normal, Illinois. This is a signature event for Will Ag, Illinois Extension, and the Illinois Corn Growers Association. If you've not been to the conference, we're now in our fifth year, and I think we put together maybe our best conference team ever. We will have along with us from the University of Illinois, Todd Hubbs. He'll be joining the panel that's discussing, of course, the agricultural markets, along with Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, Merrill Crowley, and Wayne Nelson. We'll wrap up our day with that panel, but we'll be done fairly early by around 3:30 in the afternoon. Just prior to them taking the stage, Gary Schnitke, Jonathan Kappas, and Bruce Sherrick will be there, all from the University of Illinois. Bruce will talk about the value of land and where he thinks it might be headed. Gary about farm management, and Jonathan Kappas, of course, about farm policy. And it all works into a whole package we called trade, tariffs, grain flow, and the farm economy. It impacts your bottom line each and every day. And these guys are studying what that might mean to you. I think you'll hear some insightful thoughts from each of the three of them. After lunch, we'll talk with Laura Blail. She's an associate director from the University of Illinois at Research Park. If you don't know what that is, just to the south of the sports complex, that's the State Farm Center and the Memorial Stadium, where we play football for the Illini. Not only is the iHotel there, but also you'll find a whole bunch of new buildings. That's Research Park. It's been around for a few years now, and there are a lot of agricultural tenants, people like AB InBev and Syngenta, along with others like Yahoo and John Deere and Caterpillar and a whole plethora of other places. Granular came from there. Agrible came from there. One we've talked about on the air in recent months. Air Scout is a startup in that area, and we'll learn more about what it really means to the state's economy and agriculture and the advancements they're making in partnership with the University of Illinois. But the big event for the day is our kickoff event at 10:30 a.m. I am of the mind that there's going to be a disruption in the way commodities are marketed in the very near future. And that disruption is going to be in the regular commodity markets, not just the organics, not just the non-GMO, but the regular commodity markets: pork, beef, corn, soybeans, and wheat. Anheuser-Busch, McDonald's, Clarkson Grain, and Syngenta will all take the stage. These are folks that have been working on some new concepts and ways that they would like to reach out and touch you, the farmer, and it will make a difference in your operation. This is part of being prepared for what that difference may look like and how you can use it as an opportunity. The Farm Assets Conference is Tuesday, November the 20th. The ticket cost is just $40. It's all in Normal, Illinois. Find the tickets online. Buy them now at farmassetsconference.com. IllinoisMarketReport.com. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Up next, we're going to talk about a new corn disease in the state across the Midwest, especially the northern reaches of Illinois, Indiana, parts of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Iowa, tar spot. It's been around for 2 or 3 years now, but has had a real negative impact on some yields this year. Nathan Klucheski is a plant pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He's been studying the disease and its impact. I asked him if it was because this pathogen shows up on the leaf of the corn plant that it disrupts the use of light. That's not quite actually the case, he says.
What ends up happening is that plant starts to have to make, I hate using this word, but it makes decisions in terms of how it allocates its carbon. So if you don't have enough carbon available from the leaves, the plant ends up sacrificing carbon from its starch stores and from other parts that it deems less valuable, and those tend to be stalks and roots. And so when we have severe infections of the leaf during active periods of grain fill, a lot of times those plants also will have potentially issues with lodging, stalk rots, so on and so forth.
So as producers are harvesting this year, what should they look for when they're going through the field to get an idea whether they might have a tar spot problem that they didn't realize was there? The lodging's an easy thing, but they're going to have to figure out whether it's lodging from the strong winds, just the strong winds, or from a pathogen like tar spot.
Well, it's difficult to actually say when the pathogen got to the plant, especially when you're harvesting. It's all senesced and dead. So, but if you're looking, trying to identify whether or not you had tar spot in your field, it's pretty easy to identify. You'll look at your leaves. Sometimes you'll see it on the husk or on the stalk as well, and they're going to be raised bumps that kind of have this glossy appearance to them. You can try to rub them off with your thumb or your finger, and they won't come off, and that's going to be pretty distinctive for tar spot. Some of these other fungi that you'll find on leaves as the plant senesces that kind of have this black fuzzy appearance, or even old mature rust pustules, those will come off on your fingers usually as you rub the leaves. So that's kind of what you're going to look for.
How much impact on the yield minus the lodging, because we can get an idea of that, but how much impact on yield?
So we're running numbers right now, but we've had reports in severely infected fields upwards of 30 bushels all the way up to 60 bushels per acre. And these were fields that off the chart severity earlier on in the season, well before black layer had been achieved.
What can a producer do next year to avoid it?
The biggest thing you could do in terms of, and you know, again, we don't know a lot about this disease and how to manage it yet. That's kind of what we're going to start working on this next year. But I would think tillage rotation is going to help. We do have some ratings of hybrids. It seems like some hybrids are a little more tolerant of the disease than others. We do have some evidence that fungicides can work, but the big question is timing. We don't understand the epidemiology of the pathogen, so we can't necessarily guarantee that a fungicide is going to have any kind of activity because it might go on too early or too late. We don't know enough yet to really give you good advice of when to apply it. But it does seem that these fungicides do have activities. I will say they appear to be suppressive, so it's not going to just keep your leaves 100% clean, but it definitely can have some pretty good impacts if it's put on at the appropriate time.
On the tillage side, fall tillage, and how deep does it need to be buried in order to make this happen, or do we just not know?
We don't know, and I say tillage just because that's in general a good practice to have when we know that there's diseases that are being returned to the surface in residue. We would suspect that this disease is something that overwinters here, likely overwintering on the residue in those black tar structures. So if you can bury it, it could have an effect. This year, because it was such a severe disease, maybe those effects from tillage weren't necessarily observable, but maybe in years where we don't have so much, it's enough to kind of bring those levels down. And then over time, if we ever do run into a period of extremely wet weather, conducive conditions, maybe the effects aren't as severe because there's less inoculum there to cause disease at the onset.
That's plant pathologist from the University of Illinois Extension, Nathan Klucheski. He works here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You can find out more from him on Twitter if you'd like. Check out @ILPlantDoc. That's @ IL Plant Doc. For Illinois, Plant Doctor. This is the closing market report for our Wednesday afternoon. Buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference now online at farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, looks like things are going to change for the United States in the next few days, maybe into next week. Can you tell me about some of that weather forecast?
Yeah, there's definitely a shift taking place that's going to return us to a wetter biased pattern that will certainly not be welcome. It's not excessively wet, nothing like what we saw in the latter part of September, early October, at least as far as quantity is concerned. But the frequency of rain will be up, and the temperatures are milder at this time of the year, as you know. And so the combination is not so good for aggressive field work, especially since some areas in the western Corn Belt are still trying to dry down from the last round of excessive rain. So the temperatures will frequently be mild, let's put it that way, with a lot of 50s and 60s occurring for daily highs, and lows at night in the 30s and 40s. Well, that kind of limits the amount of drying that we'll see between rain events, and if we're going to see precipitation a little bit more often, obviously the impact on field progress is going to be poor. We do have systems coming every 2 or 3 days across the Midwest, which is not all that terrible, but in this particular case, with the situation being what it is in the western Corn Belt, I do think it's not going to go over very well.
Is there a part of the United States that will be wetter than others?
At the moment, it looks like a fairly well-distributed rainfall pattern. I think everybody gets impacted at one time or another. I am a little bit more concerned about the upper parts of the Midwest rather than the lower, just simply because temperatures tend to be cooler there than they are in the lower Midwest, and therefore drying rates will be a lot slower there than they will be further to the south.
Now turn your attention to South America for me. They got started with kind of ideal conditions there in Brazil.
They did, and they still are in a large part of the country. There is an area in center-south Brazil now that is becoming a little bit too wet. We took a little break in the last 2 days, and that was very, very important because the ground was saturated in that region. But there is now going to be about 4 or 5 days here of frequent rains. We're probably going to see 2 to 5 inches of accumulation there, and probably even some locally greater amounts pushing up around 7 or 8 inches in a couple of spots. So that's way too much moisture on top of a saturated or nearly saturated ground. So field work is going to come to a halt for a short period of time, and hopefully we'll see some drier weather evolve as we get into next week, and I do think that's going to take place, and it'll start to improve a little bit across that region. But that's the biggest negative. Most of the field work there in Brazil is moving along at a much faster than usual pace, and the weather has actually been mostly ideal. We've even had rain in northern parts of Brazil much earlier than usual, so they're getting started with field work there as well. And then in Argentina, of course, the situation there has been a little bit different. Argentina has had a lot less precipitation than normal for the month of October. Originally, it was too wet in the eastern part of the country, but now that's drying down a bit, and it was too dry in the west, and the west is turning a little bit more moist at this point. So the situation in Argentina is, at least at the moment, mixed up enough that they're doing okay, but we are going to need some greater rain in Argentina during the month of November.
Hey, thanks so much, Drew.
Have a good day.
You too. That is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Visit our website, and you can buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference there, or just go to farmassetsconference.com. Either place has all the details. The tickets are just $40. The conference is Tuesday, November 20th.